Well, as Jesse mentioned, we are continuing our All series. Probably a little too much of me right now. we are continuing our All series tonight. So we've looked at how God is worthy of all glory and honor, all praise and thanks. And tonight we're going to look at how God is worthy of all wisdom and wealth. And wisdom is an interesting thing. It's one of those words, we know the vibe of it, but it's worth, as we start tonight, just thinking a bit about what exactly is wisdom. So as a way of kind of trying to help us get our minds around it, just want you to look up at the screens here. So the difference between knowledge and wisdom, right? Knowledge is knowing a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is not putting it in a fruit salad. And philosophy is wondering if that means ketchup is a smoothie. So there is a difference between knowledge and wisdom. And I want to demonstrate this in another way. I'm going to call up a volunteer. Not really, because, well, I asked him. He said yes. So Jacob, do you want to come and help me with this one? And here you go. So if Jacob, you could come up here. Now, Jacob is a very proficient soccer player. So we're going to have a little interview here. Here you go. So Jacob,
yeah.
Could you please explain to us what dribbling is in soccer?
Dribbling in soccer, all right. Basically, just... probably one of the easiest skills in soccer, just got to keep it between your feet, gaining control around players. Yeah.
Okay.
That's about it.
Okay. That's good. Okay, so you have some knowledge. You have some knowledge there of what dribbling is. Now, let's see. You said it's a skill. In order for us to be convinced that you possess this skill, we're probably going to need to see it. So do you want to just demonstrate to us across here, dribbling?
All right.
That's a lot of control. Look at that. Wow. Okay. So not only does Jacob possess the knowledge of dribbling, he also possesses the skill. Now, I'm going to need another volunteer here, Shawnee. Now, Sean, if you could stand up the other end of the stage for me, and Jacob and I are going to have a little competition. Okay. So, you know, you've demonstrated your dribbling skills. Yep. Okay. So let's just see. All right. Let's just see who can get the ball to Sean first. Okay. All right. On your marks, get set, go. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Best out of three, or you want to? Okay. Thank you, Sean. Trapped there. There were some more skills. We won't go into that one. But so, Jacob, stay up here with me. I don't know what I did with your microphone, but I'll put these down. And so we've got knowledge, we've got skill, and we've also got understanding. Okay. So do you want to explain? Has a coach ever done that kind of thing with you before? And what's the point?
To kind of show that the ball's faster than you are, basically, yeah.
Okay, in other words, dribbling isn't always the best thing to do.
Yes.
Okay, so you've got the knowledge, you've got the skill, but then you also need the understanding to know that sometimes, rather than dribbling, you should pass the ball. All right, and then again, in a situation, what else has a coach done with you? How do you know how to make the right decisions in a situation. What do you do in training that just helps you kind of, when you're out on the field, know, you know, do you pass forward, pass back, dribble, that kind of thing?
Yeah, we do lots of kind of game situations, what would happen in a game. So just say if there's a few players around you, kind of look around where you're going to go or who you're going to pass to or where you're going to run. But, yeah, the first option is probably to pass because there'll probably be too many people in front to beat. But, yeah, dribbling is good when it works, yeah.
All right, great. Let's thank Jacob for coming up here. Good on you, Jacob. So I want to give you another example of something that will help us understand what wisdom is. This is from Proverbs in the Bible. Three Proverbs. Let's put them together. Firstly, a cheerful look brings joy to the heart. Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. However, if anyone loudly blesses their neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. So that's wisdom, right? Wisdom isn't just the possession of knowledge, it's the application of knowledge. It's not just knowing what something is, it's knowing what the right thing or the best thing is to do in a particular situation and to do it. And so that's what soccer coaches will teach their players. What is the right or the best thing to do in each situation? And so when we think about wisdom, so we're not just thinking knowledge, we're not just, you know, thinking a skill, we're actually thinking about the understanding that enables someone to know what the right or best thing is to do in any given situation. So let's apply that to God. Because we're talking about God, right? We're talking about God as being one who is wise, who is worthy to receive all wisdom. And so we see God's wisdom in three main ways. Firstly is God's wisdom in creation. The psalmist says, "How many are your works, Lord? In wisdom you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures." Jeremiah says, "But God made the earth by his power. He founded the world by his wisdom and stretched out the heavens by his understanding." And then in Proverbs, "By wisdom, the Lord laid the earth's foundations. By understanding, he set the heavens in place. By his knowledge, the watery depths were divided and the clouds let drop the dew." So God's wisdom means that God understands the best way to make a universe. And he did it. So think of the most impressive thing that anyone you know has made. I'm often quite impressed by Shane Beresford. He makes model aeroplanes, and they're very detailed, and he puts the pictures up on Facebook sometimes, and like the little, you know, like bullet holes in the fuselage, and it's very intricate, and so that impresses me, right? It also impresses me. Mechanical people impress me, people who can make cars and machines. Creative people impress me, people who can create things. And so all of those people are applying, they're understanding the best way to do something in their situation, to achieve their goal and doing it. But God applies his wisdom or demonstrates his wisdom by creating a universe. Like the whole thing, not just a model of something, not just a thing, but and not just earth, not just humans, not just creatures, but God created a whole universe. God understands how to make universes. Isn't that incredible? That's the wisdom of God. He understands the best way to make a universe, and then he did it. Secondly, We see God's wisdom in his law. The psalmist says, "The law of the Lord is perfect, refreshing the soul. The statutes of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple." In Deuteronomy, God says, "Be careful to obey all these regulations I'm giving you so that it may always go well with you and your children after you, because you'll be doing what is good and right in the eyes of the Lord your God." And then about Jesus, we read, "Coming to his hometown, he began teaching the people in their synagogue, and they were amazed. Where did this man get this wisdom and these miraculous powers?" they asked. God's law demonstrates his wisdom. Because it's, and not just in a law, in a rule sense, but God's teachings are good for us. God actually says, not only did I apply my wisdom to the creating of the world, but I'm going to tell you in my wisdom how best to live in it. God's law is for our good, that we may live in accordance with the way that he has designed us and designed this universe. If you think about it, how incredible is it that the teachings of Jesus are still relevant today, 2,000 years later? That we can pick up our Bibles and read about the words, the teachings spoken by a man 2,000 years ago, and they can speak directly into our situation. If you think about it, one of the crazy things about Jesus were his parables. That's the wisdom of God. Jesus taught in such a way that people for the next 2,000 years could hear and read his teaching and go, "Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, okay, yeah, that speaks to me. That is still relevant for my life." It's incredible that the wisdom that we see. So God's wisdom is that he understands the best way for us to live and he teaches it to us. So my question is, where do you go for advice about how to live? Friends? Maybe parents? Maybe teachers? Pastors? Maybe? Google? What's that website? Life Hacker? Anyone read Life Hacker? This website teaches you how to hack life. Even if you think of like really wise people, like Gandhi, who is seen to be this kind of really wise human. But then you also see that Gandhi actually had a kind of racist streak. And some of the stuff he did in South Africa was actually quite racist against the blacks in South Africa. Or the Buddha, right? The Buddha. That's what, if people today, "Oh, what, the Buddha. That's the wise person." Well, the Buddha also compared women to poisonous snakes and taught his followers to loathe their own bodies so much that a group of his followers killed themselves to be free of their bodies. So even the most wise humans aren't perfectly wise, and some of their teachings don't age well. But Jesus, in 2,000 years, his teachings still speak. His teachings can still be understood. They might not always be easy, but they're always wise. Thirdly, God's wisdom in salvation. And I want to read to us just from 1 Corinthians. It's the most incredible description of the gospel here. And it might be one that's familiar to a number of you. So from 1 Corinthians 1. "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, 'I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate.' Where is the wise person? Where is the teacher of the law? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believe. Jews demand signs and Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. But to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. So what the Apostle Paul there is saying, he's like, think about it. So not just think about God's wisdom in making the universe, not just think about God's wisdom in his teachings, his instructions, his law, but the Apostle Paul is saying, think about God's wisdom in salvation, how he brought salvation to the world. Because it wasn't through the intelligent ones. It wasn't through the wise ones. It wasn't through the strong ones or the powerful ones. But the way that Jesus came to bring salvation to the earth was through humility, through weakness, through foolishness. And so the Apostle Paul here is writing about people who are looking at the teachings of Jesus and saying, well, that's ridiculous. That's not how the world works. You don't just get given stuff, you've got to earn it. And it's not the poor and the lame and the blind who are elevated. It's the wealthy and it's the powerful. And so the Apostle Paul says, look at the wisdom of God. If you think about it, if you think about all those dystopian movies or TV books, books that become TV shows. I'm not sure what I meant. But anyway, if you think about the books or movies that are like in the dystopian genre, who is always in control in those worlds? Right? It's the powerful. It's the wealthy. It's the smart. It's the good looking. It's always this merit-based, attribute-based system. And we see that as dystopian, like it's a nightmare. We wouldn't want to live in a world, although in many ways we do, where your success or your happiness is dependent on your power, your intelligence, your wealth, or any of that. And so we see God's wisdom in that he makes his salvation accessible to everyone. Not just the smart, not just the rich, not just the powerful. Actually, they're stumbling blocks. And so that line at the end there, for the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, the Apostle Paul's saying, hey, anything that you look at God doing and think is foolish, you need to understand that what you are seeing is so much wiser than anything you could come up with. Or do. And that's the beauty of our gospel. That's the beauty of what Jesus did. His wisdom makes salvation accessible to everyone, not just a select few, not just the elite. So the conclusion, and this is in Romans 11, this is such an awesome kind of praise of God's wisdom. It says, oh, the depth of the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable his judgments and his paths beyond tracing out. Who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has been his counselor? Who has ever given to God that God should repay them? For from him and through him and for him are all things. To him be the glory forever. Amen. So that's wisdom. What about wealth? Let's see if anyone knows. So don't bring up the answer quite yet, Mark. Who's the richest person in the world right now? Well, if they're off the books, we then don't know how wealthy they are. But let's go on the books. Anyone? The Amazon guy? Oil sheiks? Who? Oh, okay. Putin? That would be more of the off-the-book stuff. Yep. All right. Who's that? Bill Gates. Number two. Let's take a look. So Jeff Bezos, aka the Amazon guy, is number one. Oh, and his family. Okay, the divorce may have complicated that a little bit. Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Mark Zuckerberg there, he's number eight. I always look at Mark Zuckerberg, I'm like, you need to get out, dude. You need to put your face in the sun sometimes. I know you're working on those computers, but... okay, so these are the top 15 richest people in the world. Was it? Number 15, we got a woman up there. Francois Badencourt Myers and family. Anyone? Okay. Dad always corrects my pronunciation of French words. So I deliberately say it wrong. So I'm like, in 15, we have Francois Betancourt. Okay. So they're the richest people in the world. Now, let's take a look at some scriptures here. Deuteronomy 10. To the Lord your God belong the heavens, even the highest heavens, the earth and everything in it. Psalm 24, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it, for he founded it on the seas and established it on the waters. And then I love this one from Job. Who has a claim against me that I must pay? Everything under heaven belongs to me. So in other words, God owns everything and has no debt. So if you looked at the balance sheet for God, in the asset column we have everything. In the liabilities column, we have nothing. And he knows it. In Psalm 50, this is what he says. I have no need of a bull from your stall or of goats from your pens, for every animal of the forest is mine and the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird in the mountains and the insects in the fields are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world is mine. And all that is in it. God's wealth is infinite. Everything belongs to God. Literally, everything that exists belongs to God. God made it and he owns it. If you were to add up the wealth, not just of those top 15 people, but of every human being who's ever lived throughout all of history, you still wouldn't come remotely close to the wealth of God. Because all that would amount to is the things that can be owned by humans on this earth. And God owns hundreds of billions of stars and the whole universe. God's wealth is infinite. He owns it all. So here's the situation. This is where this leaves us. First point, God owns everything. He has everything you need. God alone is the source of all wisdom. And it's true that people can have wisdom. But whatever wisdom a person possesses has come from God. So it's still God's. When we've got a problem, we need to realize that God has the answer. God himself lacks nothing. God is perfect in wisdom and in wealth. Secondly, when we seek God first, we find everything we need. So it follows, right? That if God is the one who has perfect wisdom, perfect wealth, God owns it all, there's nothing deficient in him, that if we seek God and if we have God, if we know God, then we lack nothing. We can lack nothing because in God is everything. And that's what Jesus said. Jesus said, seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things, all the other things that you're after will be given to you as well. Another way of saying, when you find God, you find everything that you need. Third point, if we lack anything, we should ask God for it. That's the really amazing thing about wisdom and wealth. There are two things that really clearly in the Bible, God says, hey, ask me. Just ask me if you don't have it. In James, he says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. And in Matthew, Jesus says, which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone, or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? So this is like an incredible reality that God owns, God possesses all of the wisdom and the wealth in the universe. And God says, hey, if you're lacking anything, just ask me. Just ask me. It's such an incredible invitation. So where does that lead us? Well, I think it leads us to a place of simple obedience to God, trusting God. I think it means when we hear the wisdom of God, we need to recognize the huge disparity between God's wisdom and ours, and we kind of just need to say, okay. So if Jesus says it's more blessed to give than to receive, we say, okay, I'll give. If God says, husbands, love your wives and lay down your lives for them, husbands should say, okay. If Jesus says, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, we should say, well, that doesn't sound easy, but okay. If Jesus says, don't store up your treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, but store it up in heaven where it'll last for all of eternity, we say, okay. If Jesus says, forgive others, we, along with his disciples, say, how many times? And Jesus says, 70 times, 7 times. And we say, okay. If Jesus says, care for widows and orphans in their distress, we say, okay. Actually, don't know any right now, but I'll go look for some. That's what you do when you come across someone who has infinitely more wisdom than you. Because think about the alternative. Think about hearing the wisdom of God and saying, oh, I'm going to think about that for a bit, actually. I'm just going to weigh it up. I mean, it seems like it could be right, but let me just think about it a bit more and I'll see. Or what about if we said, all right, well, that's what God says, but let's also see what, you know, the Yahoo lifestyle blog says. Let's, you know, okay, that's the first opinion, but, you know, I want to get some other opinions before I really kind of lock myself into that. It'd be crazy, wouldn't it, to live like that, where you actually have access to infinite wisdom, and when you receive it, you're like, We do need to be diligent in understanding God's wisdom. And it's true. Sometimes it's not totally clear. Sometimes we find ourselves in a specific situation, and we're like, okay, this exact thing is not in the Bible somewhere, and I'm going to pray to God, and maybe I do need to apply the wisdom God has given me and to seek knowledge and counsel and understanding, and they're good things, right? God's not saying, hey, like jettison your brain and just, you know, go on autopilot and I'll steer you. God's saying, hey, use the things I've given you to figure out your life. But what you should never do is second guess God. Because God does say some things really clearly. And how often do I hear or read the really clear wisdom of God and find a way out of it. And find a way around it. Find a way that it doesn't maybe really say that, or it doesn't necessarily apply to us. We don't need to be confused. God's wisdom is for our good. We need to trust him. And that also is true when it comes to wealth. Again, we need to be responsible with the things God's given us. We need to be diligent and wise and faithful stewards of everything he's given us. But we also just need to trust him. Jesus said, don't be anxious. Don't chase after this stuff. Don't let wealth distract you from the things that really matter. Be careful about getting rich because it will distract you. We need to hear those things. I found this really cool quote from A.W. Tozer. He says this, most of us go through life praying a little, planning a little, jockeying for position, hoping but never being quite certain of anything, and always secretly afraid that we will miss the way. This is a tragic waste of truth and never gives rest to the heart. There is a better way. It is to repudiate our own wisdom and take instead the infinite wisdom of God. God has charged himself with full responsibility for our eternal happiness and stands ready to take over the management of our lives the moment we turn in faith to him. That's the choice that we all have. Are we going to live our lives according to our own wisdom? Do we somehow think that we can outsmart God, that we have more insight than God, that we can have more understanding than God? Or are we going to say, okay, God, I trust you. I'll do it. I'll do what you say. I'll do what you show me is the way of wisdom. And I'll trust you also with my wealth. We've been talking about this this image in Revelation where there's worship happening of the Lamb, of Jesus. And they say, worthy is the Lamb to receive all glory and honor, praise and thanks, wisdom and wealth. And so the last piece of this picture is, what does it mean for Jesus, who already possesses all wisdom and wealth, to receive wisdom and wealth from us? And I think it simply just means acknowledging that any wisdom and wealth we have is from him and giving him glory for it. Not kind of saying, hey, I think I'm pretty smart and that's something that's separate to you, and so I'm going to try to figure out my own life here and not trust that you are the one who is able to lead me in the right path. So I want to challenge you today. Whose wisdom are you living your life according to? When you encounter a problem, what's your first instinct? Google? A friend? Or are you actually desiring to seek the wisdom of God and then trust God and be obedient to it? Because God has it all. And he's waiting to give us his wisdom because he knows it's for our good. Let me pray for us. God, we thank you. It really blows our mind, God, that your wisdom is so incredible that you know how to make a universe. And Lord, your wisdom is good, and it's for us, it's for our good. And we praise you for the wisdom of your salvation, God, that you reveal truth and that you draw people to you, not based on their intelligence or wealth or social status or power or any of that, but you have revealed your wisdom through the humble and the weak and the poor, so that everyone can know that it's you that's doing it, that you are the wise one, that you are the one who owns everything and who has given everything to us. And so, God, I pray for each of us that you would help us to trust you, that you'd help us to be obedient to you, that we wouldn't read your word and encounter your wisdom and second guess it or find a way out of it or think that we know better, but that we would receive your word as you intend it to be, which is words of life. Your wisdom brings life, Lord. So help us. Help us to seek you, to trust you, and to enjoy you. And Lord, help us not to worry about money and wealth and possessions and getting caught up in all of that. Whenever we lack anything, God, give us the faith just to come to you and ask and trust that in your wisdom and in your goodness, you will give us what we need. You'll supply all of our needs because of your great love for us. So we praise you, God, in Jesus' name. Amen.